This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Folks, we all know that Doge and what they're doing or what they're not doing, how they're going to do it, how they're going to execute has been a top of mind issue for many folks. And our next guest authored a piece called Memo to Doge, Smarter Tech Alone Won't Deliver Efficiency. We're joined by Ryan Bourne, the R. Evan Scharf Chair for the Public Understanding of Economics, Center for Economic Studies at the Cato Institute. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Great to be with you.
Ryan, I guess when you can, most people are assuming when you look at the lineup of the folks that make up Doge, they're going to be looking from an IT lens to things more so than any other. And obviously, I think the impetus of your piece kind of drives home the point it's going to take more than that.
Yeah, I think a lot of tech Silicon Valley types, what they really have in mind when they think about reform is changing the personnel of an organization and also changing the technology of an organization. And there's no doubt that the federal government could do with many updates to its IT systems, to its software, and the efficiency that that would bring. It's also true that we do need to see reform of the federal workforce, and Elon Musk has already been trying to kind of eat into that in his initial efforts of looking to make savings. The point, the bigger point that I was trying to make really is just to say the only sustainable way that we're going to reduce the size and scope of the federal government is ultimately to eliminate many of the programs and objectives that it has. And if we don't do that, then yes, you can make some savings on the margins from reducing headcount or improving technology. But you're not going to get anywhere near reducing spending by $2 trillion per year, $1 trillion per year, which is the sort of objective that Elon Musk and others at Doge seem to be aiming for.
You know, what's interesting is one might think that we could do this on a parallel path, but if we're really going after limiting government scope, you certainly don't want to start engaging in spending dollars to improve IT if you're going to eliminate scope, right? I mean, it's not necessary to have that technology behind it. You don't want to just deploy technology for the sake of deploying it. It needs to be weaved into these organizations operationally so they make sense, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, nobody from the Trump administration, I think, was coming in thinking, let's improve technology so to make these DEI programs even more effective in you know, ensuring diversity across the federal workforce. Ultimately, you first of all have to take a stand on what you want the federal government to do and then try to work out from there, okay, given we've got these objectives, given we've got these things that we have to deliver, how can we do them as efficiently as possible? And to be fair, Elon Musk understands this. Anybody who's read the biography of Elon Musk by Walter Isaacson, the first thing that Elon Musk does whenever he goes into an organization is to eliminate as much as possible on the principle that you only really know that you're cutting enough when you're having to add stuff back because you've actually made the operation less efficient than it could be. So I think his instincts are right on this thing, this type of thing. I think the danger, though, is that because ultimately Doge will need Congress to help it by eliminating some of these programs, eliminating some of these agencies, my fear is that because they won't get that support from Congress or might not get that support from Congress, they'll try and kind of salami slice things up just using executive action. And that, you know, the executive does have some control over personnel, obviously, and it does have control over IT systems. So, you know, my worry is that kind of by default, the things they can control will be updating this software and, you know, changing who's employed by the federal government. I just don't think that's enough.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting to me, and I'm curious for your reaction. I'm sure you saw the same press conference when Elon was talking about the actual technology or lack thereof that we have deployed by the federal government. It was almost he was shocked and surprised and I think almost angered to find that a lot of our major systems are still on COBOL. And I think it kind of blew him away. He was like thinking, this is not what I expected to find. And then to add insult to injury, some other programs were actually manually handled. When you talk about the pension system debacle, it was kind of like, we are the leading country in the world as it relates to technology. Our own government just doesn't seem to know how to deploy it.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And of course, you know, there's not great political incentives to keep this stuff as up to date as it should be. And you know, that's one of the reasons that Doge has kind of been created through what used to be the U.S. Digital Service. But, you know, there are so many of these perverse things that exist at the federal government level. Every change to a government form at the moment has to go through the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs. So you want to change any form that the federal government puts out, it has to go through this agency. And that office has no expertise in user research or form design. So you have this bureaucracy of the bureaucracy that means that, you know, even though there are some things that we've mandated through Congress that the federal government should do, they're kind of tied up in their own internal red tape. They have these old systems that don't work particularly well. And so even when, you know, we as individual citizens and people who live here have to deal with the federal government, it's much more difficult to do so than it should be. And I think that's the kind of frustration that Elon Musk was really getting at. This stuff is needlessly complicated and needlessly kind of old-fashioned technology, given, as you say, all of the innovations that we've seen.
But that kind of highlights and is emblematic of what you're talking about, right? Because technology will not eliminate in and of itself unuseful whips, works and processes. And that's what you just described, right? A whip. You need to fundamentally go in, and one is the scope, what are you doing? But two, reduce the amount of whips before you go deploy the technology, because you know, you would be deploying technology that's no longer necessary. And when you reduce the whips, you become more efficient.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, it's so important to first think about what the federal government actually does, because there's so many things that the federal government does that are kind of directly contradictory to each other and which creates inherent inefficiency in what the government's doing. I mean, you know, we support through Joe Biden's Inflation Reduction Act subsidies, we support renewables to cut carbon. Yeah, at the same time, we impose tariffs on imported solar panels, which make it more difficult to decarbonize. We subsidize infrastructure projects, but then enforce environmental rules, union rules, tariff rules that drive up the costs of providing that infrastructure. You know, you can go down the list and find all of these ways that policy is inherently inefficient at achieving certain objectives. And unless you're really willing to kind of tackle that and say, well, no, actually, you know, the federal government isn't going to be in the business of imposing tariffs on this sort of thing, or the federal government isn't going to regulate that industry to this extent. If you're not willing to do that, then you kind of have to have these competing regulatory frameworks. And, you know, making those more efficient may help achieve their individual objectives, but it can actually make the economy overall less efficient, because it means that these contradictory objectives clash even harder than they do at the moment. So you're absolutely right. You really can't get to an effort to improve the efficiency of government unless you're really clear on what the government should be doing in the first place.
We're visiting with Ryan Bourne from the Center for Economic Studies at the Cato Institute. Can we actually beat back this landscape, this mentality that bigger, more is better? I mean, it seems as though that's been the mantra to make this bureaucracy grow, right? It's almost as if we want to be the largest employer in our country. And when government is the largest employer in any geographic region, you're in trouble, right?
Yeah, so there's around, I think, 2.3 million federal employees, obviously heavily concentrated in the Washington, D.C. area, one of the areas that's been booming in relative terms over the past couple of decades, which I think tells you all you need to know. But we shouldn't over-egg it, right? So, you know, even if you were to get to a scenario where you could eliminate three quarters of federal jobs, that would save about $300 billion per year. Now, that's, at the moment, less than a fifth of what we're borrowing every year, and only about 4% of overall spending. You know, we're spending $7 trillion per year. So the vast bulk of what the federal government does is actually transfers money from some people to other people through Social Security, through providing health care, through Medicare and Medicaid, paying debt interest to bondholders. So, you know, those things are a huge part of the budget. So we shouldn't pretend that, you know, reducing the bureaucracy through reducing headcount is like a silver bullet to this. But that bureaucracy is built up precisely because the federal government tries to do a lot and tries to do a lot across a whole range of different domains, which kind of, you know, I know I sound like a broken record, but brings me back to my original point. If we fundamentally want to shrink this bureaucracy, we first have to rationalize the number of objectives and programs that the federal government engages in.
How about this thought, Ryan? We go from a full-time Congress to a part-time Congress. I've always believed that we meet too much. We are talking about too many things. We're involving ourselves in too many things that we know little or nothing about. And all we do is sit up there and pontificate on all kinds of different things. And they set up rules to just perpetuate them. You know, forget about us as the taxpayers.
Yeah, no, I mean, there have been periods in certain other countries where, for various reasons, it's been difficult to form a government, and the government hasn't been around for months and months on end. And yeah, the sky doesn't fall in. Things keep going. And in many ways, you don't get these flow of new damaging laws and regulations. So, you know, I'd be open to reforms of government in that direction. I think there's a real tendency to want to do something. You know, you want to show your constituents that you're kind of active and you're pushing various pieces of legislation. You want your name to be on a piece of legislation as a sponsor. And that's one way that politicians think they get credibility. There are very few votes, it seems, from just engaging in the kind of simple things that government is supposed to do well, and then trying to restrain the growth of government, in part because, you know, the benefits of having a smaller government are kind of dispersed across the whole population, whereas the people who benefit from government spending more money tend to be very clear and obvious constituencies, whether that's, you know, farmers through agricultural subsidies or green energy providers through renewable subsidies. So, the incentives work against small government, and you know, I'd be totally open to some reforms of how often Congress sits as one mechanism for restraining its growth.
Yeah, I mean, when you think of some of the things that we're doing, and you wonder what boardroom were they meeting in where they thought that this was going to be a good idea, and actually put that in a piece of legislation. Now, they always hide it with about 60 other topics in that particular legislation and hope it passes and nobody notices it, which is yet another problem as to why we probably end up increasing government scope. We do it every day, voting on bills, and the general public has no idea we're even doing it.
Yeah, and I think a big problem here relates to some of the things we've been talking about earlier, which is that we have often Congress passes these big open statutes, right, that create a new regulator and a new part of the regulatory bureaucracy. And they give lots of latitude to that regulatory bureaucracy to set rules to achieve certain goals. I'd like to see us move back to a system where actually Congress kind of reclaims the mantle in some ways. So there's an act up in the Senate at the moment called the Reins Act, which would try and rein the federal bureaucracy in by essentially saying that Congress should have to pass explicitly major regulations that it wants the country to abide by, rather than doing it in this underhand way whereby they pass these big open statutes and then let federal bureaucrats kind of decide to fill in the blanks. And I think, you know, that combined with things like having sunset clauses in legislation whereby, you know, a regulatory agency or certain regulations just disappear after a period of time unless they're actively renewed by Congress. They're the sort of things that we could look at from a process perspective to stop the flow of an expanded bureaucracy. So I think we kind of have to do a 1-2 punch here. Got to try and find ways of getting a retrenchment of government so we can reduce the federal bureaucracy that's already there, but then also introduce these new measures whereby it's more difficult for it to grow back.
Well, I was so happy that we were able to get you on. I read your piece. I read it a couple of times, and I said, you know, no one's really talking about this. You bring up a perspective that I know why no one inside the Beltway is talking about it, but it's something that really needs to be discussed. So we really appreciate you taking time to join us today. Appreciate your time, your insight. Job well done.
Great to be with you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Ryan Bourne, R. Evan Scharf, Chair for the Public Understanding of Economics, Center for Economic Studies at the Cato Institute. He authored a piece called Memo to Doge, Smarter Tech Alone Won't Deliver Efficiency. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We're joined by Arthur Hardy with the Times-Picayune, an editor and publisher of the Mardi Gras Guide. It's no secret we are right at the beginning of the first big weekend of Mardi Gras. Welcome, Arthur.
We're ready, Newell. I just hope we can have good weather, but it doesn't look like it for Sunday, does it?
You never know. As long as you've been around with parades, you know,
I know,
sometimes there's a little break and you get it right in there, you know.
We can hope, can't we? But it's going to be good tonight and tomorrow. Sunday's pretty iffy, and I've already got calls on all the captains, what happens if, and haven't heard back yet. But tonight's going to be a good night. You know, O'Shaughnessy kicks it off uptown at Magazine and Napoleon, 5:30, which is early for them. They have the smallest parade of the year, 15 floats, but it's always a nice parade. And then Cleopatra, which has grown to 2,800 women, a whole bunch of tandem floats.
Wow.
And they've changed their route. Remember, the last 2 years, they've had problems making the turn off of Jefferson to Magazine. Each year they've hit a tree, and the tree hasn't moved, but the parade has. So they're going to start at Magazine, Napoleon and Chapultepec and follow Ocean. So that's a good way to start it all off. Excalibur in Metairie at 7, all on Family Gras, and they've reverted to the old route, which you remember, starting at Clearview and ending at Martin Berman. And that's a very nice parade. And then over in Mandeville, the only parade at Mandeville has now, the crew of Eve, some 725 women, 34 floats. And the big question mark there is, where are people going to park? The Mandeville police have decided it's not safe to have all the pickup trucks parked along the parade route. So people, I guess, are going to have to park in the neighborhood. And it's going to be problematic, but it's done in the name of safety. And who's going to say the hell with safety, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Arthur, I don't know if you've been to the Crew of Cork. It's a kind of a semi-organized thing down in the French Quarter. But I've been a couple of times. It's a blast. It's actually a good time.
And you know, we don't ever want to confuse people, especially out-of-towners, with that, which is a lovely little walking parade, just a few blocks long, really, and a real float parade. But that doesn't mean it's not significant. And they kind of kick off the whole thing. I think it's at 2 today. And it's just like Barkus. That's a real parade, but not one with floats and people. It's all animals on Sunday. A little word about that for rain. But hopefully it's going to be a good weekend. But I would say get it in tonight and Saturday, just in case Sunday's a washout.
Six parades in New Orleans uptown tomorrow night, starting with Crew of Pontchartrain.
Yeah, and you know, I did some math. You could sit on the corner of I guess St. Charles and Napoleon and see 124 floats. That's what they all add up to back to back. You know, it starts off with Pontchartrain, their 50th anniversary, and they're rolling at 11:30. Legion of Mars is behind them. Then Choctaw, then Ferret, then in the evening you've got Sparta, which has members of the Mystic Order of the Phoenix, followed by Pygmalion, their 25th anniversary. In Metairie, you've got Mad Hatter's biggest parade in Metairie, 39 floats. And then Covington's only night parade, Olympia, with 27 floats at night. So quite a day Saturday. You know, I'd like to say something for everybody. And if you really try hard, you can make all of them. But it's pretty tough.
Yeah. And then Sunday we got a Crew of Barkus starting out at 2 o'clock.
No, did I lose you? I'm not sure if you're hearing me.
I'm hearing you. Crew of Barkus starts at 2 o'clock on Sunday. All right, we seem to have lost Arthur, but on Sunday the lineup is Crew of Barkus at 2 p.m., And then we have three parades uptown, Mystic Crew of Femme Fatale, Crew of Carrollton, and Crew of King Arthur.
Hello.
And we have Arthur back, I believe. Do we have Arthur? All right, we're having a little technical difficulty with this. But Arthur, if you can hear me, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. We'll check in with you again.
Hello.
During the week, next week, for the upcoming weekend as well. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and text line. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. Well, we know that the weather's been a little crazy, right? 70 degrees one day, down into the low 30s the next day, requiring us to move around all kinds of heating apparatus. But with that, there are challenges. And here to talk to us about it is Chief Brian J. Adams. He is the Louisiana State Fire Marshal and a longtime friend. Chief, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing, Sheriff? Good to be on, man. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you, sir. What are some of the things that you're seeing? Hopefully nothing tragic here recently.
Yeah, so let me talk a little bit about the fatalities, if you don't mind. So we've had 22 fire-related fatalities in Louisiana since the first of the year, which is up 8 from this time last year. And only one of those fires that we've had can we relate that there was a working smoke alarm in the home. So, you know, we have a program called Operation Save a Life, where we partner with fire departments across the state, and we provide those departments with free smoke alarms to install in homes in, within those fire districts. And currently we have about 28,000 smoke alarms on hand. So we really wanted to push the message out that if you call your local fire department and get with those folks, they'll come out and install a smoke alarm in your home free of charge, you know, nothing but just call in, get on the list, and they come put it in for you. So I wanted to get that message out first, if you don't mind. And then really want to talk about space heaters. So space heaters, you want to make
Wait,
sure
before
you
we go there, Brian, Brian go ahead, Chief, man. Before we go there, let me ask a question. Seconds matter, right?
Absolutely. Listen, the smoke alarm is going to be the thing that gets you out, you and your family out first. It will absolutely wake you up and get you out the home way before the fire gets out of hand. And look, you should check those things if you have them. I check mine monthly. I push the button just to make sure that mine's still working, you know, even after all these years in my home. So you want to make sure you get them. It's a lifesaver for sure.
And all you need is the end of a mop handle or something. If you don't have a ladder and you don't feel like pulling it out, and just kind of push on that button lightly and see if it works.
Yeah. You know, back in the day when we started pushing this, you used to have to change your battery once a year. But those smoke alarms that you get now have a 10-year lithium battery in them. So all you do is get a new one in 10 years and just change it out, throw another one up on the ceiling. So you should have a couple of them in your home, you know, close to the kitchen area, because that's where we see a lot of fires start. You want to have one in the bedrooms of your home. Make sure you get your family out. But, yes, absolutely.
Brian, talk to us, if you would, about preparation for getting out. I mean, you want to kind of have thought about that beforehand, right?
Sure. You should always have a plan. If you have small children in the home, talk to the children about, listen, this is what we're going to do if something happens. You know, if the fire is, you know, towards the front door, we're going out the back door. If it's towards the back door, we're going out the front. If there's not another option, you want to try to make sure that you can get out of windows. But those are things you should absolutely talk to your family about ahead of time.
Again, because seconds matter. You don't have time to sit there and just deliberate this process.
No. So I'm a stats guy. So if you will, so we estimate that fire doubles itself about every 30 to 45 seconds. So imagine if it's a foot, in 35 to 40 seconds, it's going to be 2 feet, 4 feet, 8 feet, 16 feet. So in a matter of minutes, it could engulf a whole room.
Yeah. I just want to make sure that folks understand that, the implementation or putting up a smoke alarm is not the end all. There's more to do, right?
No, it's not. Absolutely not. But it's the one thing that's going to get you out first. If it works, it goes off. It's going to get you moving. It's going to make you aware that there's an issue in the home, and you can get ahead of it before it gets ahead of you.
Yep. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. I know you want to talk about something else.
Yeah. So space heaters 3 to 5 feet away from any combustibles in your home. You know, people are using space heaters these days. Just to make sure that you keep your home warm. So combustibles are blankets, pillows, furniture, curtains, all of those things that could catch on fire quickly. The space heaters, never plug them into a power strip or an extension cord. Power strips and extension cords are not made to handle the amperage that it goes through to heat up those space heaters. You want to make sure you plug them directly into the wall. Never use your stove or your oven to heat your home. Not made to do that. You run into carbon monoxide issues when you try to use those things. So you want to make sure you don't do that. And just practice safe things. You know what I mean? Look, turn the space heater off at night if you can while you're sleeping. You know, use it during the day. Use it early in the evening before you go to bed. Try to turn it off. You want to just really practice some real safe, you know, issue things around your home.
Yeah, especially if you have it like in other rooms throughout the house that are not readily accessible to you, you know, so if something does catch on fire that you're not able to respond in a quick way, right?
Yeah, and if you have like it's in a room.
And if you have pets, you got to be really careful where you place these things, right?
Sure. And you want to make sure it's not in your path to get out as well. Like if you want to make sure it's not in your exit route. So if you're in your bedroom and – you have to go through your kitchen or through your living room to get to the front door to get out and or the back door, you want to make sure that space heater is not in that path.
Now, I hear a lot of people talk about gas cooking, you know, as if you have a cooktop that's gas as opposed to electric. There are those that believe electric is safe to use, gas not. You guys recommend it doesn't matter, either one.
No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. We've seen fires up through my years. I've seen fires that started on both. It's not something that we can advise either way on.
Right. Caller called in, asked about whether or not smoke alarms in the attic, if that's a good practice.
I mean, it's not a bad practice. I mean, we recommend that they're in the areas where, you know, you'll hear them. I mean, if you got an attic and your attic is closed, you're less likely to hear it. But that's not something that it wouldn't hurt for sure.
Right. Let's talk about hot water heaters. The difference between what we see now with those tankless heaters versus gas water heaters versus electric water heaters. Are there any that have a higher propensity as it relates to fire?
No, we don't see a lot of fires with water heaters, and I think you can get those tankless. I think you can get them either electric or gas. I think they go both ways as well.
Yeah.
But no, we don't see a whole lot of fires starting around the water heaters. Look, we get some dryer fires because people don't take the lint out. That's common. You know, the vent gets clogged up with lint, and you'll see some issues with that sometimes. Look, the thing that we see most is kitchen fires, right? Unattended food on the stove. That's one of the biggest.
Yeah. Got a text here that says, do you have to open the flue of a gas fireplace while burning?
Always. Any type of fireplace, you should have the flue open. Absolutely.
I mean, I know they do have these ventless fireplaces where there's not a flue, but if there is a flue, it's meant to be open if you're utilizing the fireplace, right?
Absolutely. That's going to make sure that you get those carbon monoxide gases out that come from having fires, and you want to make sure you get that smoke out.
Yeah. Another text here, electric blankets instead of space heaters.
Yep. We recommend electric blankets. They are well, to keep you warm, or use extra blankets, you know, put a couple of them on you to make sure you stay warm. Again, with the electric blankets, make sure you plug them directly into the wall.
Into the wall. Okay, that's what I thought.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what
Absolutely.
I thought. You don't want to use. And a lot of time, people are using these extension cords that are like little skinny things. They don't really, you know, and they're indoor cords. They're not really designed for any of that, right?
Absolutely not. Those little indoor extension cords that you would use to, you know, plug your computer in or whatever that might, you know, those smaller devices are. But you definitely don't want to plug any heating devices into an extension cord of any kind, or a power strip, either one.
Yeah. Final thoughts?
No, man, just appreciate being on. We'd like to get that message out. We got a few more cold days. We're going to push these smoke alarms as hard as we can all across the state. I want to keep getting the message out. We got to try to start saving some lives.
Yeah, if you got 28,000, we want to consume them sooner rather than later, right?
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
Hey,
and we're pushing it
how many
hard
times
all across the state, man.
How many times have you heard something, you know, where people say there's nothing for free? Well, these are truly free.
Free.
and
y'all
going to
install them for free. It takes about 5 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's not many offers like that. And so call your local fire department, and you'll be able to reference this program, which is called, tell us again.
Operation Save a Life. And if the local fire department that you call does not participate, you can go to our website, which is lasfm.org, and request one, and we'll come from the fire marshal's office and put it out for you.
Chief Brian Adams, thank you so much for joining us today. I know y'all were busy during the Super Bowl as well. We appreciate that. The state fire marshal for the state of Louisiana. Have a safe Mardi Gras.
Thanks, Sheriff. Appreciate you.
All righty. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. So there's a lot of opportunities this weekend to get out and about with his first weekend. Always enjoy visiting with Arthur Hardy, talking about all of the parades that will be going on. I was with one of the captains last evening that will be celebrating their 25th anniversary. And, you know, folks are very excited about all of their parades. Was talking to folks with Endymion the other day. They've got a bunch of things scheduled through this weekend, getting everything lined up and so forth for Endymion. There's a lot of excitement out there. And it's just exciting to share in their happiness and their joy relative to Mardi Gras. And hopefully the weather works out for folks. You always hate to see that. And so we wish the best to the crew of Pygmalion, which is celebrating their 25th year, and others. And Scoot's going to be riding this Saturday with the magical crew of Mad Hatters, and he joins us.
Scoot, it's insane. Welcome. It's insanity. It's crazy. But it's fun.
Hey, I happened to see some of the outfits that you were modeling the last time you were at Local Express.
All right, look. There's a few comments on those. Every once in a while, I have to just block somebody from my Facebook page because they just don't deserve to be on it if they don't have, like, a sense of humor. Do you know why I do that? The one that I did with the hot pants, the glitter hot pants, it's up to 96,000 views. So that's why I do it. I mean, if it didn't work, you know, I wouldn't do it. But I do it because it works. You know, it's all so fun. And, you know, I can't believe that some people are, like, so uptight that, oh, my God, he's wearing something that a woman would wear. Oh, my God, what's happening to the world? Look, you know, Barney Fife dressed as a woman. Milton Berle dressed as a woman. Flip Wilson dressed as a woman. It's like, you know, I don't dress like a woman. But if I'm sitting here and there's no woman to try something on, what the hell? I'll try it on. I might even do a skirt today.
There
and
you
I don't
go.
Have any leggings. So, you know, I don't know. The record now is 96,000 views.
You do the skirt,
views,
you might beat that 96,000 views.
Well, that's what I'm going for. That's what I'm going for. We're going for the record. Going for the record. So, yeah, we're at Logo Express. This is the Mardi Gras apparel collection. People are already here. This is a place to get something to keep you nice and warm because it's going to be a little chilly for the parades. So we'll talk about Mardi Gras.
Get out there and see Scoot. Have a great weekend.